Welcome to the Life Self-Mastery Podcast, where we bring in entrepreneurs who have created online businesses and improved their lifestyles. Here's your host, Rohit Malhotra.
Hi everyone, I'm Rohit from LifeSelfMastery.com, and today we have Erin and Lee Frey, who are founders of Frey, a modern clothing care line, and have taken on mega brands of the laundry care industry and created products made with a unique high-quality formulation. Frey has just graduated from the prestigious Y Combinator in San Francisco. Leaf is a graduate from Georgetown University, and Erin is a graduate of Dartmouth College. Welcome to the show, guys.
Great. Thanks for having us. It's wonderful to be on board.
Sure. So, you know, please share your journey on, you know, what got you interested into solving such sort of a problem, and how did you get into Y Combinator?
Sure. So it's a bit of a lengthy story. I think that some entrepreneurs probably start out with knowing that this is going to be their career move. We were a little bit different. We started as a college side project out of just a very narrow need, it seemed. We started as a men's laundry detergent brand. Now we're selling to both genders, about 50-50. But we're buying these men's shampoos and men's face products and men's grooming products, and using the same laundry detergent that our mother had been using. And not that there was anything wrong about that at all, but it just kind of struck a chord. We're like, hey, this seems to be a pretty outdated industry. So we honestly launched out of a Georgetown townhouse, just making detergent in our basement. And again, out of basically a side project.
Yeah, and we basically just wanted something that was a little bit more tailored to our liking, because it seemed like all of the products on the market were using very similar scents and very similar formulations, and we wanted something a little bit different. We thought that a lot of it was outdated.
So we this ran into a Kickstarter. The Kickstarter went through. The results of the Kickstarter ended up getting picked up by Good Morning America. And all of this was, again, basically off of a, quite frankly, not the best product. I was working full time. Aaron was still in school. And yet people were still buying the product with very limited marketing. And more importantly, they were rebuying it. So something about what we were building had struck a nerve with people. And so eventually it hit this point of traction where we truthfully couldn't ignore it anymore. And we kind of stopped and looked around, and it was, this was probably a year or two after Dollar Shave Club had sold. And we realized that there were some huge market shifts going on. Laundry is one of the most personal aspects of a person's life, right? Everything you wear, but also all the towels that you dry off with, the sheets that you sleep in, and everything in between goes through your laundry. And yet all the products and formulations hadn't really been changed in 10 to 20 years. They were dangerous for your clothing. They were dangerous for you. They were dangerous for the environment. And so we realized that, hey, this isn't just a niche market. This is a clearly untapped opportunity that nobody had really decided to take on. So we rebranded and built the formulation from scratch, and then launched in earnest fall 2016. And so now we went full time around fall 2017 and earlier 2017. And then we started growing 20% month over month once we both went full time, picked up, you know, tens of thousands of customers, made it into Y Combinator, just finished around.
Yeah. And so although we started off basically just doing something because we were interested in it and thought that it was fun. But again, once Good Morning America picked us up, we really booked down and did our research and looked for what we could create that we thought actually could succeed. And so what we realized is that we didn't want to have to compete with a lot of the other like major leading brands of laundry detergent. So we wanted to be something that they could not be. And what many of them can't be is a sort of higher end brand. And so So that's when we started branding ourselves as a clothing care line rather than just a laundry detergent. We worked with a chemical manufacturing company with like 30 plus years of experience to create a formulation that really was like, you know, exceptional. Like, it was great for your clothing. It was great for the environment. And we worked with a professional fragrance house to create a scent inspired by, you know, the some of the top like men's fragrances. And that sort of opens up a market that other leading brands couldn't access. So like Saks Fifth Avenue reached out to sell our products. We focus on direct to consumer, but of course, like, you know, if Saks Fifth Avenue reaches out to us, and you know, we'd be happy to sell them our products. And the thing is that Saks Fifth Avenue would never sell just a laundry detergent, but they will sell a clothing care line. And so we're sort of blending these three massive industries, like the $150 billion laundry detergent industry, the menswear and womenswear industries are worth over $1 trillion, and there's a $72 billion fragrance industry. So the opportunity here is massive.
Yeah, I mean, that's really an amazing story. You know, when I got to hear about you guys, that you are going against some big brands, I'm pretty surprised that, you know, the repeatable numbers are really good. So, you know, can I talk about the competitors in your space, or do you think when it comes to, you know, private label laundry brands, you the only ones out there?
Sorry, can you say that one more time? Apologies.
I want to know, are you the only private label brand who's going against the bigger brands, or you know, can you talk more about your competition?
Sure, yeah. And so we're, I guess private label is one of the words for it. This is a custom formulation that we just filed a patent on. So we're not white labeling another formulation. This is ours. And Aaron touched on this a little bit, but the interesting reality is that, you know, the big brand stories don't really resonate with too many people. We don't want to name like specific brands, but you know, you can imagine that the over the shelf brands, people aren't buying them because they resonate with them on a brand level, where, hey, I want to buy this brightly colored jug of, you know, watered down blue goo. They're buying it just because it's habitual. Right. And yet again, it's a super personal part of somebody's life. So we're kind of the only brand moving in this market to tell a brand story and create a value proposition that we want to resonate with the consumer on a personal level.
And so there's this massive upcoming demographic of people who care more about the details regarding their scent, their appearance, and their clothing. And so we are sort of creating products that have just like a very different branding style to help better care for your clothing, to help, you know, it has a scent inspired by some of the top like fragrances. And it's really just a very different brand than anything else out there.
And obviously the consumption model is different as well. Most existing brands are very focused on brick and mortar. We're one of the few, if not the only, doing a subscription service through our own website and not through Amazon. And so the kind of vision here is to drive people to our website where they have an amazing brand experience. They order product that really resonates them with, that they love. And then truthfully, hopefully we never see them back on the website again, because it's a passive reorder through a subscription or a passive reorder through a future SMS reordering launch. And that's both great for the consumer because it just makes their life easier, and it's great as a business model as well. And obviously the subscription service has been proven time and time again, but it just hasn't really been done within laundry detergent effectively in our mind.
Interesting, you know, because the millennials and Generation Z buying behavior is very different from, you know, baby boomers and the other people, you know. So they want, is it true that they want customization, or they would want a little more personalization in the buying behavior when they're looking at buying products?
Absolutely. There's kind of this fundamental shift in consumerism as a whole going on, and obviously the younger generations are are kind of the leaders in this, the Generation X and Millennials, but it's honestly trickling upwards in our mind to the older generations as well. And this difference, this change in consumption is that people, again, are buying into brands that resonate with them. And it doesn't necessarily buying a premium brand, but almost everybody is investing in their clothing, for instance, in some way, shape, or form. And it might not be monetarily. It might just be spending time to pick out their clothing. But it's all about this kind of telling your own personal brand story, truthfully, right? And your own personal brand story might involve, hey, I buy from this brand of clothing, from this line of hair products, from this line of grooming products. And we want to bring, again, laundry detergent into that mix. And as you touched on, it's part of this customization, it's part of this quote unquote for me consumption.
And there's also, so there are a million different clothing brands that are cropping up every single year. So the competition there is like really intense. But we like to think about things like the analogy we like to make is in the California Gold Rush, the people that got rich were not necessarily the miners. It was the people that sold jeans to the miners. And that's where Levi's came from. So in a day and age where the clothing industries are all absolutely booming, we are producing products to help better care for that clothing.
Interesting. So, let's talk about, where do you manufacture your products? Or is it made in USA or is it made in China? How do you source the products?
Yeah, so we're actually, almost every single one of our products is made within the US. That's important to us as well as important to the business model. Not importing products shortens our supply chain, which helps massively with product launches. It helps massively from a cash flow perspective. It helps massively with inventory planning. And again, it's also part of this idea that we've been super fortunate. We want to give back. A huge aspect of our brand is philanthropy and giving back to the environment. And honestly, part of that is not outsourcing our formulations overseas. Another aspect of this is, again, we did mention that this is our formulation. We filed a patent for it. And truthfully, sometimes when you work with overseas vendors, you're not 100% sure what you're getting. One of our first interactions with an overseas supplier way back in the day was asking for, hey, we're looking for an eco-friendly detergent. Can you help us produce that? And they said, sure, we can put eco-friendly on the label. And we said, no, can you help us produce an eco-friendly detergent? And they said, sure, we can put eco-friendly on the label. and so that kind of turned us off, at least until you have the buying power to truly make sure what you're purchasing is what you're trying to build. But it was just for 10 different perspectives, it was easier to do within the US.
And also quality is definitely extremely important to us and our brand. And one of our first experiences back when we were just starting off, just doing our Kickstarter, the Kickstarter raised enough for us to make our first purchase order. For that, the bottles themselves, like the plastic bottles, they were from China. And we had about 5,000 of them. And every single one had a pinprick hole in the top, which of course we didn't realize until after we had actually received them. And so we had to go through and hand glue all 5,000 bottles so that they wouldn't leak when we shipped them out. And that definitely sort of turned us off from working with companies that we couldn't really interact closely with and that we didn't trust.
Right. So, with what happened with Dollar Shave Club was they really knew how to market the products. And, they had some really funny YouTube videos. So I wonder, how did you market your products? How did that viral marketing come into picture? And, how did you get those tens of thousands of customers on board?
Yeah. So we wanted to do something that was a little bit different than Dollar Shave Club. Like, Dollar Shave Club is a fantastic company. But we wanted to create something that was, again, something that, like, you know, a leading brand of detergent could not be. And so we really sort of focused on this, this sort of subscription service that,
So part of our marketing kind of outside of the Facebook grew organically. So Dollar Shave Club did this amazing video that was shared everywhere. And most of our marketing has been word of mouth, which is obviously kind of the golden goose if you can get it right. And so around 7 to 8 months ago, our customers organically started writing some of the funniest customer reviews that we'd ever read. And this was in sharing them. And these were things like, "Frey solved my insomnia. I can't leave my bed because my sheets smell so good." Or, "Frey smells like a nomad wizard lumberjack rescued me from an enchanted forest. I'll never use another detergent again." And these are just like, you know, when we first saw these, we were like, this is absolutely amazing. I can't believe people are writing these. And so, of course, to try to help fan the fire for this, we then started hosting a competition every month for who could write the funniest customer reviews. And so what this grew into was now we have hundreds, approaching thousands of customer reviews a month, with people just writing some of the most creative things you'll ever read and sharing them. And it creates this amazing cycle where, one, it's organic word of mouth, and two, we can then cycle these back into our Facebook ads and our other forms of digital marketing. And it's some of the best social proof you'll ever see. And again, it just is like this core group of kind of fanatical customers. And at the end of the day, we're having people talking about laundry detergent, which was one of the coolest signs that we've ever seen. It was just like, hey, this isn't a chore that normally people talk about. We had somebody literally write us a limerick the other day and send us that in an email. We have people sharing pictures of their dogs. A customer wrote us saying that her husband, and these people had been married for 30 plus years, and saying that her husband used to walk the dog for them because the dog was a chick magnet, and now he won't walk the dog because the laundry detergent is the chick magnet. And you know, them being funny, they're 60 years old, but it was just like really kind of heartwarming to see, and all from laundry detergent, which against us was an even bigger proof.
Interesting. I see a lot of physical products use Facebook and Instagram ads, once it slows down, then they look at podcast ads, or they look at retail and spas and other avenues to grow the market. So have you focused only on online, or do you think it's a good strategy to look at offline, marketing spaces like retail stores and other distribution centers?
So we definitely want to start off by focusing on direct-to-consumer online sales for a couple reasons. One is that a lot fewer people are actually going to these retail stores, these physical retail stores to purchase products. A lot of them would prefer to just purchase their products online, have it delivered straight to them, whenever they want. And so we are sort of helping out with that.
And the other thing is that we're definitely earlier than some of these brands and smaller, obviously, than most of them. And so the consumer data that you have access to when people purchase through your site and when you have direct access to your consumers is massive, right? Where before every purchase order we place, for example, we can survey all of our customers, figure out what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong, what they'd like to improve upon, what they'd like to change. And obviously that doesn't even touch on the A/B test we can run on our website as we drive traffic to it. So what we've been focusing on is until we have perfect product market fit, or as close as we can get to it, the product that we keep iterating on and making better, we want to focus as much online as possible so that we can internalize that customer feedback and make a better product. And then once we feel that we have a fantastic product that's ready to make the switch into retail stores, we'll make that flip. And Harry's obviously did a wonderful job of this. They waited a good amount of time, but once they made the switch into Target, something like 60% of target customers had already heard of Harry's, and they just started kind of blowing their sales out of the water. And I don't think we'd wait that long, but it's just a wonderful way to be able to internalize customer feedback and iterate on it very quickly.
Got it. And you know, I want to talk about the unit economics. If you come to talking about the revenue numbers that you've been doing in 2018, and what are the customer acquisition costs for getting a customer on board?
Sure. So the I think that every online brand, and you hinted at this slightly in the last question, has been seeing increased digital marketing costs as Facebook, kind of pulls back on some of their targeting capabilities and everything else. And so the great thing about running a consumption business such as ourselves or consumable is that we do not need to be focused on profitability on our first purchase because our lifetime value, again, people on average reorder our products every 2.5 months. Our retention rates are incredibly high. And so with fashion brands or clothing brands, you often have to pay to repurchase your customers, right? Where you basically have to resell them your new line of products every season. And with laundry detergent, very much not the case. So our blended, because we won't go into the super specific numbers just because it's constantly changing. But our blended acquisition costs sit around the value of our per purchase. So after profit margins, we're reasonably below profitability on the first purchase, but we're across the board making that back on the second purchase. So from a cash flow perspective, payback period is less than 3 months, which is a good place to be in. And then every place back from where every purchase after that, again, we're not paying for retention. They just come back organically. So it's almost a pure profitability from that point. And so that fits more in line with, that's the grooming models and the shaving models. The nice thing about laundry detergent versus shaving is that you never have to worry about somebody deciding that they want to start experimenting with a 5 o'clock shadow. Everybody has to do laundry one way or the other. And I think that it's funny to read, read research papers about how this trending up in beards and 5 o'clock shadows is hurting companies that sell shaving equipment and vice versa. And obviously at the end of the day, everybody has to do laundry. Nobody's going to start experimenting with doing laundry less frequently because that's in trend.
Got it. And, what I see from the website is the classic package is the customer's favorite, where you have, detergent and sheets. I want to talk about your target audience. You started off with men, but now you also started reaching out to women. So do you think men are, or most of the buyers and women are influencers, or do you think it's the other way around for your particular brand?
So in the past, it used to be that women would be the primary purchasers and doers of laundry and other clothing care chores. But things like we thought that was in a way sort of wrong, that a lot of companies were perpetuating these outdated stereotypes. And so we wanted to sort of target men a little bit more, especially considering that there is such a large upcoming group of men who care more about their clothing and their scent and details and everything, and are willing to invest in themselves. For the same reason why a lot of people will purchase a shoe care kit to take care of an expensive pair of shoes, people spend a lot more on clothing on average per year than they do on shoes. However, we did have we have a number of value propositions, and we had a lot of women reaching out to us saying that they loved our formulation, they loved our scent, they loved our philanthropy, they loved our mission, they loved that we delivered straight to them. So at that point in time, about 20% of our customers were women, even though we were branded towards men. But we had so many reaching out to us that we lost any explicit for men aspect of the brand. And just by doing that, almost 50% of our customers are now women, and we are going to be launching more lines of scents and products that are going to appeal to a larger sect of people.
Yeah. And so just to clarify one of Aaron's points, one of our original purposes were to help break down these kind of gender stereotypes. We thought it was pretty sexist that the current industry seemed to be pushing that only women should be doing laundry, right? Like, we're both self-labeled feminists. And so we were just like, hey, like, guys, we should all be doing this chore. The trend was already in that direction. You know, there is a 30% increase in the number of men doing laundry just in the last 4 years. And that's the way it should be, right? This should be a chore that everybody does no matter what your stage of life. And then, as Aaron said, we realized that, hey, like, this was a product that was already appealing to everybody. We got rid of the explicit for men aspect, and all of a sudden the demographics almost evened out. And so the path forward will be creating more products that are just gender inclusive.
Yeah, totally makes sense. I want to talk about, you know, how did you get into Y Combinator? You know, why did you, look at Y Combinator as an option and not look at, raise $1 million on some of these equity crowdfunding platforms or take funding from VC? Why Combinator?
Why Combinator was truthfully an internal debate for us. We weren't 100% sold on it, but it was one of the best decisions we've ever made. It's for us, Y Combinator was way more than just about the funding, right? We were fairly confident we could get the funding with or without it. Obviously, with the Y Combinator name, raising money is significantly easier and you can do it at a much higher valuation. That's all very hard, like hard facts, just you can get an amazing valuation coming out of Y Combinator. But what was more important to us is that around, again, 9 months ago, we decided, like, hey, we think this can be, with hope that this can be a $1 billion brand, and we're going to need a lot of expertise and an amazing network to do that. And we've worked hard to build our own network outside of this, but Y Combinator is just quite literally one of the most well-connected organizations in the entire world, especially for what we're trying to accomplish. And so funding or the valuation, but getting access to some of the people in the world. And it's a constantly growing network, everything from other companies and brands within our class, just again, some of the most incredible people, to, the CEO of Y Combinator, who's one of our closer mentors now. And obviously they can put us in touch with just about anybody that we want to get in touch with. We're fortunate enough to be speaking with the CEO of Harry's next week, for example. And we've spoken to the CEOs of some of our other favorite inspiration brands. And so that was really, really big for us.
And also just being in the program was pretty inspiring, because every single week we would have these dinner meetings where some really successful people would come and speak to us. And it was just fantastic to see how real they seemed, they might be worth, over $1 billion, but they'll be up there on stage in jeans and a t-shirt, joking around, being charismatic, talking about their story. And it sort of makes you realize that this is not something that is unattainable. This is something where if you have a good idea, if you believe in it, if you follow through with it and just, try and help your company survive at all costs, then you will eventually, hopefully, be able to have that potential to become a $1 billion brand.
My next question was, what's the strategy going forward? You want to keep going at it, keep adding more products, get into different categories, and have a big payday. That's the goal for Trey Brothers.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So the next big move, like Aaron talked about, will be not that we're for men at this point, we're for everybody at this point, but we'll be launching more products that just appeal to further far more different demographics. We'll start focusing on shipping internationally. We do so currently, but we've had just a lot of interest from, so some of our investors are based internationally and want to bring the product overseas. We'll focus on laundry detergent and clothing care for the immediate future and just kind of use that hedgehog concept from Good to Great, and it's one of our favorite books as well. But just really focusing on what we can do right, and then we'll begin to branch out. But right now we basically have an e-commerce system where we put in X and we get out Y with a return, and we're just going to leverage the funding and the mentors and the connections that we've pulled from YC to really start growing this.
Got it. So let's quickly do the top three. What's your favorite business book?
One of my favorite books is called The Power of Habit. It's a book that basically, you know, as you could imagine, talks about habits and the what goes behind the creation and reformation of those. So it's particularly interesting to me because it talks about how a habit is a neurological pattern I majored in neuroscience, and so I know a lot about how by thinking a certain way, it can reinforce those connections and cause it so that you will think that way more in the future. And so there is an aspect of just, you know, it may be hard at first to do something, but at the same time, if you keep on doing it, then it'll get easier and easier and more natural until eventually it becomes just part of life. And so I found that was really interesting because there was a time when my habits of could have been better, and by looking at this book and by looking at where I wanted to be, I was able to instill habits that were pushing me further towards getting to where I wanted to be.
Yeah, and then one of mine was Think and Grow Rich, a pretty obviously super well quoted one, super well known, but in a very similar vein of thinking as to what Aaron mentioned, where it was much less about the growing rich aspect of the CEO. Defines growing rich is there's, you know, a million different ways you can define richness, whether it's rich in family or friends or relationships or anything else in your life, but it's kind of positive affirmations and as cliche as it sounds, just literally and articulating it out loud that you can get to where you want to go. And I think that kind of positive mentality instilled through your life can make everything better, even in really dark times.
Okay, and you know, if you could go back in time when you started your current business, what is the one thing you would have focused on?
Yeah, so I think we would have made the switch. At least for me, I would have made the switch to this sooner. It definitely took us probably longer than it should have to realize that this had massive potential. We were really excited to be working on it, but I think we looked at it as a side project for too long. And you know, we would have been maybe a year more ahead of ourselves if we had started earlier. And so again, I think that stems partly from not necessarily lack of belief, but just like, hey, like any, as Aaron touched on earlier, like anybody can do this if you just work hard enough and you really put all you have into it.
Okay, and you know, what's your favorite online tool? Aaron Leith, would you talk about your favorite online tools?
So I find Boomerang for Gmail extremely helpful. It's just a way to, you know, make it so that you can send email reminders and things like that. It's a very simple tool, but it is very helpful. And so I like to use that to remind myself of various tasks that I need to come back to.
And I personally love Pocket. It's just a way to save articles to read later. Kind of like YouTube holes, I find myself going down these article holes where you read one article and there's just it delves you into these interesting trains of thoughts that you want to learn more about, but you know, you can all of a sudden look and realize that you've been reading it. It's a great way to kind of save them, and you can save from a desktop, puts it onto your phone way when you're you know, commuting or walking around or whatever, you can bring it back up to read later, and it's just a really neat time saver.
Awesome. And you know, what is the best way people can reach out to you and know more about Lyft Freight?
Yeah, sure. They can reach out through the website. We still handle a lot of the customer emails personally, and those that we don't handle personally, we have the sister of our CTO handle. So someone who's very close to us, customer service is one of the most important aspects to get directly to us. And yeah, would welcome. One of the things we pride ourselves on is taking critique and feedback super near and dear. So would love for anybody listening to feel free to reach out.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Aaron Lee, for coming on to the show. I really enjoyed speaking to you and a really smart product that you've launched. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. It was great speaking to you, too.
It was wonderful being on. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Life Self Mastery podcast, where we teach you how to start and grow your online business. For more information, visit Rohit's blog at www.lifeselfmastery.com.